Hello, welcome to another edition of the Take the Shot podcast. I'm Nick, and this time I am going solo. Sorry we didn't get back out to you guys sooner, but kind of glad I waited a little bit on this one because we got some great games last night. But before we do get into those games, do just want to say Clippers going clip. Nuggets beat them, game 7. Nuggets decided to show up, the Clippers did not. We got another typical James Harden game. I'm sure you guys probably already know James Harden's history in clutch playoff games, so really won't go too in-depth with that. Kawhi Leonard, that was a little bit more surprising, but to be honest, no one really showed up on that team. It looked like maybe that team might have been a little bit tired. They are an older team. Norm Powell hasn't really played well on the road at all this series, and yeah, the Nuggets just showed up, and everyone talking shit about Westbrook, everyone that loves to criticize him, we got a great Westbrook game, and he really got to show out, so just happy for him, happy that Westbrook really got to show what he's capable of. I know he's not the same Westbrook that we grew up, knew, and loved, but hey, he's still contributing to a great NBA team, and I guess since this one's a little bit late, won't go too much into that game, but we'll go into last night's game where Jokic really showed out, 42-22, and 6, I believe, along with 2 blocks. MPJ didn't really show up. Aaron Gordon hit that clutch 3 in order to win the game for them. The Nuggets were losing most of the game. That 3 that Aaron Gordon put them up, that was the first lead that they took since the first quarter of the game. I kind of just, at the end of that first quarter, it just kind of felt like the Thunder were taking control, taking all the momentum, if you will. And it seemed like they were going to hold on to that. Nuggets started to make a comeback in the fourth. And I guess the weird thing is, I just don't know why Mark Daigneault just decided to have them foul while they were up 3. I guess I would say foul, but I guess just how they did it is more unusual. Just because you were giving Denver so many more possessions, allowed them to extend it out. Then Chet ended up getting fouled, and then he missed 2 free throws, which really swung the game. How I would have played it out is you really just want to, because like when they started fouling while they were up 3, there were still like 17 seconds left in the game. The Nuggets were probably going to try to run some sort of offense, but most likely they're not getting a shot up before 10 seconds. So at least like let them get down the court, run some time off the clock, and then like probably under 10. Foul them, and then you have some time to inbound the ball, run out more clock, then play the free throw game that way if you want to do that. Obviously, you don't want to foul them in the act of shooting so that they get 3 free throws. I do understand that, but it just felt like they were fouling way too early on that, but it was just a great game. Glad we actually got to see a good game. Honestly, I thought the Nuggets were going to get blown out that first game, especially after playing Saturday night. It probably helped that the Clippers did lay down for them, so they didn't really have to work too hard in the fourth quarter. Probably get a little bit more rest than they normally would. Again, the Clippers really did not show up. They didn't show up with a lot of energy that game. Well, they showed up with some energy in the first half. Again, James Harden just wasn't really taking shots, though. He was making plays in the first half, really setting up with a bunch of assists. then just kind of in that second half, he just really wasn't doing much of anything, wasn't really assisting anymore or scoring. Kawhi scoring dipped. Really, the whole energy from the Clippers dipped in that second half, and really allowed Denver, none of their starters even scored over 25 that game, so it allowed them to, let's say, rest, if you will, and probably help them not be as exhausted for this Monday night game with such a quick turnaround. OKC, they did have a week or so off. I don't know if maybe they were a little bit rusty from having that time off, but we'll have game two on Wednesday, so I definitely expect the Thunder to come out strong. Expect Shea to have a good game. Expect J-Dubs to have a much better game. Chet to have a better game. But the Nuggets got what they wanted. They got the split in the first game, or in the first two games. Yes, they really should go for the throat and try. Of course, they're going to try to win game two, but it's just hard to replicate that desperation that OKC probably will come out with game two. So I definitely expect OKC to win game two. And I forget the exact stat, but I guess 80% of the time or whatever, if a team loses game one at home, they win game two. Again, it's just hard to replicate that desperation. And the Nuggets, they are still injured, so Michael Porter Jr. can barely lift up his arms. I guess it'll just be very game-to-game where you can get from him. You can kind of feel like you'll, I guess with him at this point, you just feel like you can feel it out in the first quarter. You can feel whether or not he'll be able to give you anything in that game. If his shoulder's feeling better or feeling all right that day, he can probably give you something. If not, it probably won't give you much. You'll probably just end up playing more Westbrook, and Westbrook will probably end up closing. It was just a wild ending sequence to that Denver game. Aaron Gordon hustled, got an offensive rebound, and then just threw up a wild shot. It was just kind of him and Westbrook down on the floor at that point. But they still come back. Chet misses those two free throws. Westbrook gets that assist to Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon sinks that three. There's only 2 seconds left. Nuggets up two. OKC didn't have any more timeouts left, so they couldn't advance the ball, so they kind of just had to chuck it up. And obviously weren't able to get up a good shot for a chance to win it or a chance to send it into OT. Again, I did say I'd make this quick, so go into the Boston Celtics game. I guess Kristaps did not come back because of an illness. It feels like it's always one thing or another with him. I know he did have that weird, mysterious illness earlier in the season that I don't think we ever really got an answer on what it was. Not sure if they ever found out what it was. Not sure if that is what came back or what. Jrue Holiday, he was actually playing pretty well. Surprised he came out so strong, especially with that hamstring injury, especially with someone at his age. But Celtics, they just cannot stop shooting threes, and Jason Tatum cannot stop settling for his little step back three, which, hey, I'm not complaining. Fuck the Celtics. Kind of, I'm glad they lost. Glad the Knicks came back and were able to win it. Let's go. Knicks in six. Do it for the good guys. But, yeah, the Celtics, they're just really like the Rockets of the mid to late 2010s. Went 15 for 60 last night, 45 missed threes, the most in NBA history, which kind of just reminds me a little bit of the 28 Rockets team in 2018, where they missed 27 straight threes in a row. Granted, I don't think Boston missed that many in a row, but just shooting 25% from three and taking 60 of them. It's really hard to win when you're missing that many shots from three. I know that people hate the mid-range in the NBA now. The Rockets really, the Rockets were some of the leaders of that analytics movement, but most teams really take that strategy to heart now, and most teams will say a mid-range shot is not a good shot, but I just say a shot that goes in is a good shot. So if you're able to get a good look from mid-range and able to make it go in, why not take some of those? I know the Celtics really, Jason Tatum did used to have that in his game, but the Celtics really coached that out of him, so he really does not take that many mid-range shots anymore. Now he just sells for step-back threes, and if they hit, they hit, and when they don't, they don't. And honestly, the Knicks didn't really have that good of a game. They could have played much better. Cat really didn't have a good game. So the fact that they were able to steal one on the road without them having that great of a game, if they have a really good game two and are able to steal another one, won't be looking good for Boston. I know everyone that I've heard and even the betting markets, they were predicting that Boston would win this relatively easily, probably win it in four or five. I think Boston winning five is probably the favorite or the most likely outcome. But with the Knicks stealing game one on the road, it's more likely than not that the series will be stretched out to at least six games, if not seven, and really will give Boston a run for their money. I know that Boston had cleared everyone off their injury report. However, I doubt Jaylen Brown is still feeling 100%. I'm sure Tatum's wrist, probably not at 100% either. Also, although it was weird how he injured his wrist, sat for a game, and then scored 35-plus in two or three straight games against the Magic. I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but unfortunately, the Magic, they just don't really have the offensive firepower to match up with the Celtics. The Knicks do. I don't know. I guess with this situation, it's probably hard to say. It's more of a rest versus rust, just because the Celtics, they did have more time off, but didn't have that much more time off than the Knicks. The Knicks, still, they got like about 3 days off after playing the Pistons in that heavily fought series. The Pistons are a much better team than most people realize, and I just don't think that they were getting the proper credit for that. And I think people are overrating how easy Boston would be able to sneak through the West, or through the East. I think people do forget that pretty much every team that Boston played last year, their star player either was not playing or was injured. Luka, he was injured in the finals. Donovan only played the first two games of their series. Jimmy Butler did not even play in the first round series against the Heat. And then Halliburton, he still had his hamstring or whatever injury from last year, even though the Pacers definitely should have won at least two games last year against the Celtics, but managed to sell both of them, which was kind of the reason why I was not really able to take them super seriously this year. However, it looks like they are turning that around, but we'll get to them in just a second. But really, the Knicks, they were able to pull out a great win. Jalen Brunson able to, I guess I was just kind of surprised how he was able to score. He's a great player, so he'll always find ways to score. Really, they just need more from Cat. So if they can get a couple good games from Cat, a couple like 30-point games, I believe that they'll be able to win those games. Cat, he'll just have to attack Porzingis. I guess we'll see how if Porzingis comes back and how that really affects their team. I'm also just amazed that Al Horford's still able to keep it up at this age. And I guess one thing that I feel like people don't account for with the Celtics is Al Horford's like 38 and he's still a significant part of that team. He's probably, I don't know if you want to say he's like their fourth or fifth most important player, but he definitely is one of their most important players. He's more reliable than Porzingis. He may not be better than Porzingis at this point, but at least with Al Horford, you know he's more likely to play. But again, with him being 38, you don't know if he'll be able to stay on the floor or if he will just get worn down at some point. So I really think that injuries, Celtics did get the benefit of injuries last year. However, this year, it seems like the injuries may be affecting them more than it is the other teams. So I just want to say that this, or at least them getting, if they do manage to get through the East, it won't be the same walk in the park that they had last year. But let's go into the Pacers, Cavs. I do think that the Cavs are a much better team than the Pacers. However, if Darius Garland is not at 100% and misses more games, it will definitely be a longer series than I thought. I thought that the Cavs would be able to win it in five. However, I think this series will probably go like six or seven now, just due to the Darius Garland injury. Props to Ty Jerome, like, much better player than I thought. I didn't get to watch him too much during the regular season, but it's also, again, also just during the regular season. Not really sure how they'll react during playoff time, and I suppose it's the first year that Ty Jerome really has taken off, but did like some of the shots he was able to get against the Pacers. Donovan Mitchell was just able to get pretty much anywhere at will against the Pacers. Cavs, I felt like they got a lot of open threes. They just missed a ton of them. Like Donovan, he got some good looks, and he ended up 1 for 11 from 3. I think the only three he made was the very first one that he took. But he had some other nice-looking ones that literally just rimmed out. But the fact that he was just able to literally get anywhere on the floor he wanted, able to get any shot he wanted, the Pacers' defense, I know they, for the second half of the year, they ranked eighth in defense. I don't believe the Pacers are that good of a defensive team. I guess just with the back half of the regular season of the NBA, it's hard to tell how good some teams truly are or truly are not, but we will... I guess this would be a true test for the Pacers. Unfortunately, they weren't really able to get tested by the Bucks, just due to the Dame injury and Giannis and Gary Trent really only being the two productive players on the Bucks that entire series. The Bucks really did not get anything. I guess they got one gift from Bobby, but other than that, didn't really get much from anyone else. So we really didn't get to see the Pacers tested. The Pacers will be tested a lot more this series. The one thing I will say for the Cavs is they definitely need to get Evan Mobley more involved. And Evan Mobley was able to get pretty much any shot he wanted to and was shooting more efficiently. Donovan had 30 shots. Ty Jerome had 20. Again, Donovan, you probably want to cut that down. Probably will get cut down if Darius Garland's playing, but even if he's not playing, probably keep him closer to like 25. Probably want to get Evan Mobley's shots up to somewhere around 20. And just getting Jared Allen more involved just because, again, against the Pacers, they really could have gotten any shot they wanted. Pascal Siakam started off kind of hot, but however, he did cool off in the second half. And I guess Haliburton, he was able to get almost to any spot he wanted on the floor. So, however, I think they just need to do a better job of forcing Tyrese Haliburton to be a scorer and then just letting the big guys help, like letting Evan Mobley and Jared Allen help on those drives to the rim. But Haliburton, he's got some of the best court vision in the league. If there is an open guy, he will find them. And he's also a great passer, so he can make almost any pass that he needs to make. But I think if you just force him to be more of a scorer and not able to get his teammates as involved, they will have a shot to win it. Again, not sure the status of Darius Garland's health, but hopefully we are able to see him this series. He had a great year, huge bounce back from last year. So let's see how he does this series. And hopefully we are able to see more from him. But even if we aren't able to see more from him, I definitely think the Cavs will have a much better performance tonight in Game 2. Again, Donovan Mitchell pretty much got anywhere he wanted on the court. Every shot that he took in the lane, I felt like it went in. It just really felt like every shot that he was missing was from deep. And even the shots that he was missing from deep, they still look, he still got some really good looks out there. So I definitely would say the Pacers cannot count on being able to go one, having Donovan go 1-for-11 again, or having the Cavs as a team just miss that many three-pointers. The one thing I will say that did kind of change the momentum was like Ty Jerome did pull up for three in the fourth, when after like Donovan was able to pretty much just get wherever he wanted on the floor, and he was just killing them every time. He was just scoring every single time he was driving in the third quarter. I guess there's a possibility that Donovan probably did get a little bit tired after having to carry that workload in the third, but I think if they just spread it out to Evan Mobley a little bit more, let him go to work, help ease that load off of him. Also, if Darius comes back, that will ease the workload off of him easier. I guess just want to go into the final series that we have. The Warriors were able to beat the Rockets in Game 7. It seems like with the Rockets, it was just the same problem that they had all year. They just don't really have a go-to scorer. I was glad to see Amen Thompson. He kept just getting better and better as the series went on. I guess he was kind of slowed down at the end with that calf strain. But I just felt like he was really the only one showing up for them in that Game 7. But really would love to see what they do next year. And definitely feel like he has made it known that they should be building that team around him. What they do with Jalen Green and Şengün, that remains to be seen, but we'll speculate more about that in the offseason. But finally, the Warriors do have to play the Timberwolves. The thing with the T-Wolves, I know they will have a lot more they'll have a lot of defenders to throw at Steph Curry, just like the Rockets did. So Steph may have another tough series. I would say the main difference is that the T-Wolves probably will be more, at least their offense will be more tested than they were against the Lakers. They were pretty much able to get anywhere they wanted on the court. Pretty much they just had to go against Luka and pretty much could get any shot that they wanted. Luka gave up 41 points in game five, and I think that was the most points given up by a single player in a playoff game, if I remember that stat right. Or even if it wasn't, it still giving up 41 points as one person, as you being the primary defender, just can't have that, especially if you're someone of Luka's size. You should be a much better defender than that. However, everyone on the Warriors will play defense, so they will not be scoring as easily. And I guess I should mention that the Warriors were bailed out by a great Buddy Hield game, but I feel like that's just kind of how Game 7s go. It's always, you always got to have that great surprise performance from someone. I thought it might have come from like Pods or Moody, but ended up coming from Buddy Hield showing up after scoring 4 points in the two previous games combined. I probably won't carry that all through the T-Wolves series. I'm sure that they'll hope that it does, but I'm sure he'll probably be more up and down again, but hopefully he is able to at least have another game like that if he's able to have another game like that, he can win him a game. Steph will probably get you a couple games. Well, Steph and Jimmy combined will probably get you a couple games. I know Ant will get the T-Wolves a couple games, so it will really just come down to how the others perform. I know Dante DiVincenzo really had a rough series against the Lakers. We'll see if he can bounce back against the Warriors. Julius Randle, he had a great series against the Lakers, but it feels like almost every T-Wolf besides Dante and I guess Nas after game one had a great series against the Lakers. But again, the Lakers don't really have any sort of rim protection, and the perimeter defense is severely lacking. The Warriors will, even though Steph isn't the biggest guy, he is great in a team defense concept. The one thing about the Warriors, though, is that they just don't really have any size. I don't know if Kevon Looney will play more in this series to combat Rudy Gobert and his size, but I suppose we'll see what Steve Kerr decides to do there. Obviously, there is the Draymond Rudy beef. We'll see how that goes and see if Draymond is able to stay in the series. Currently, he has 4 technical fouls, and you're only allowed 7 in the playoffs. So, hopefully, Draymond can keep it under control and stay in this series and not get suspended. But we will definitely see how that goes. And mostly, if he can just control his limbs every time he gets fouled and not just randomly hit people. But really interested to see how the series goes. I guess it kind of feel, I don't even know if I want to say this, because this is what I thought would have happened with Denver, but with the Warriors coming off game 7 and playing them at, well, they definitely played a much harder fought game 7 than the Nuggets did. It almost feels like the Wolves are probably going to blow out the Warriors this game 1, but with the Nuggets doing what they did last night and the Celtics, how the underdogs have performed so far, I guess we'll see if the Warriors are able to keep that trend going and even keep this game close or pull off the upset. But I suppose that's all I really have for you guys right now. That's all I have for these series. We should be coming back. We'll probably record Thursday, drop on Friday, so we probably won't have any feed or not analysis on Thursday night's games, which would be game 2 of T-Wolves, Warriors, and I guess game 3 of Cavs, Pacers. But we should have some analysis for you on the other game 2s tomorrow, which would be Nuggets OKC and then Celtics Knicks. Probably give you some more predictions for the series, but we will follow up with you then. And again, would be record. We'll probably record Thursday and drop Friday. All right, you guys have a good one.